Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
He's Mike Johnson from PWInsider.com, or you can check it out online at PWInsiderElite.com. All you cheapskates, you know what? You should shell out for the good stuff over there with the Elite section. Mike, thanks for the time. How's everything going, man?
Hey, Fritz, how are you, man? It's a great day. Star Wars is obliterating records left and right, and we got a pay-per-view Sunday, and Global Force Wrestling is going to crown their first champion, and New Japan just had a great show, and it's wrestling, you know? The only day I fear in wrestling is the day when my phone doesn't ring.
Ain't that the truth? So here's the thing, okay? For anybody who doesn't know, and tell me if you're still doing this, obviously, you're going to see Star Wars, you're a huge Star Wars fan, but you have tried to avoid every kind of trailer, video, anything.
No. People got it misconfused. Okay, I have seen the trailers.
Oh, okay.
Here's my theory, okay? If Lucasfilm put them out, it's okay to see them. But what gets me, and this is just the way the media is now, I'll be reading an article on a movie website about, say, Gotham or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever, and at the bottom of the article will be a title that says, so-and-so character revealed to be returning a new Star Wars movie. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to know that.
Good. You're not clicking
I'm getting backdoored into things. Like, even just this morning, I was reading an article about The Hollywood Reporter about the latest trailer that was just released. They played it on Monday Night Football and all that. And in the article for the trailer, and it's just like, oh, you know, breaking down the trailer. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Let's read it and see what their theories are. They talk about one of the characters, Rey, who's going to be the female lead, apparently, and something that she does in the movie. And it was just written snarkily in parentheses. Oh, Rey, we already know you're going to do blah, dot, 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 dot. And I was like, you know, that is what upsets me.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to be backdoored into information. I want to go in as blind as a bat as I can, and I know someone out there is going to say, oh, well, you put up spoilers for SmackDown or TNA. The difference between A and B, anything on PW Insider, at least if, as far as I know, and anything within my sphere of control, is listed as a spoiler. You will never read on PW Insider and then accidentally come across that there was a title change 3 weeks from now. It's always listed as a spoiler, and it's always listed as something in a separate post. So if you want to know, and you want to, if you want to be Neo and take the pill from Morpheus as in a Matrix reference, you choose that. It's never going to be forced upon you. I don't think any audience member, anybody who's a fan of something, should have that information forced upon them unless they want it. And I don't want Star Wars information forced upon me. I mean, it's to the point now where I don't know how I'm going to do this. But I have sincerely thought about not logging into any social media for the next couple of weeks.
That's going to be tough.
And that's a problem for me because I maintain the PW Insider social media.
Yeah, that could be tough. Well, here's the thing, too. So you signed up to go see the marathon as well, and that's like a 20-hour commitment.
Yeah, I'm out of my mind. I'm completely out of my mind. And that thing starts at 3:30 in the morning on Wednesday going into Thursday morning. And the last movie unspools at 7 p.m. Thursday evening.
Right.
It is completely insane. I have never, ever wanted to do anything like that before in my life. I've done like three movie trilogies like in a day.
This is a totally different commitment, though, man.
Yeah,
there's
like
seven movies in a row.
When At World's End came out, they did the Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright trilogy of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and all that. But, to me, this is nuts. The only saving grace that I know of is I'm told there's going to be like a 20 to 30 minute break in between the movies so I can get up and I can walk around. And thankfully, like, where I'm going, it's only a few minutes away from my parents' house. So, like, I can leave and go take a shower or something in between movies.
Well, here's the trick.
I'm not looking forward to, I think it's crazy, but my theory on it is this, and it's just myself. I grew up in that original Star Wars generation, which sounds weird to me, because now we're, like, on the third Star Wars generation, sort of. And to me, nothing as a child or as a kid growing up brought me greater joy than getting to see those movies. So if I could skip the prequels and have that seat waiting for me, I would walk in when the first original Star Wars movie Episode 4 is starting, because to me, I would have paid the money just to see the original three movies in the movies again, special edition or not. We can argue those merits another day. Just because I love those movies. Those are my favorite movies of all time. And arguably, other than pro wrestling, it had the most influence on me growing up and gave me the most entertaining and entertainment factor growing up. So to see those in order and then see the new movie, to me, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Plus, after this, as we all know, they're going to churn out a movie every year. So the idea of Star Wars being this special, unique thing, sort of like the star at the top of the Christmas tree, after this movie comes out, chances are it can never happen again, because we're not waiting 3 years, 10 years, 15 years for the next movie. We're waiting 2 years for the next episode to come in, and there's going to be side movies and spin-offs and all this other stuff, and cartoons and comic books and movies and novels and all that. So at some point, you're going to get up to bat, and you're going to swing and you're miss, and you're going to have a terrible Star Wars movie. Some people might say it already happened with Phantom Menace. I could argue that. I could not argue that, I should say. But in terms of the return of Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Chewbacca, Princess Leia, R2, 3PO, the core cast that everybody loved growing up, and they kind of were Star Wars, you only get one shot to see it again and one shot to walk in and enjoy it again. And they might blow it, but the hope is that they don't. And to me, I think it's kind of cool to see everything and live through everything and take that ride one more time. And a couple of friends and I are going to do it. And it's going to be a long day, but I think it's cool. And, to me, Star Wars was very important to me as a person. And I think it's kind of like pro wrestling. If you get it, you understand. And if you don't get it, you're rolling your eyes at me going, what's wrong with him?
Well, it's funny you say that about going to see, you'd love to just see the original three, because I felt the same way. If I could just go see the original three and then see the new one, I would do that as well. The problem, though, is you can't hold your ticket, or you can't hold your seat, or you can't get in there to reserve a seat, you know, in advance. And then that's going to be one of the other tricky things, I think, for you for a marathon is, I know that there's some theaters when they do marathons, they like everybody to leave and then go back in, and you can't save your seat.
Oh, well, I hope that's not the case, because there'll be a lot of weird, angry nerds there.
That happened.
Myself included.
I had a friend of mine that recently, that a couple of years ago, went to the Batman one, and the theater wanted everybody to leave and come back in, and he said, and they refused. They go, we are not reloading. We will just sit right here. We will not go outside the theater so we can keep our seats, because they had really good seats. But some theaters will try to do that, and that's the problem. If you want to go to a marathon and you don't see the first few, you're screwed when it comes to what seat is going to be left over for you.
Yeah, and the one thing that, I really wish that they had done them in some of these theaters where you can, pick the seats in advance.
Yeah.
Because, to me, listen, I'm 41. I'm not running to get a movie seat, and I'm not fighting with people to get a movie seat. But there's going to be some crazed militant fan that gets there 12 hours early because I have to have row C, seat 14, and God darn anybody who takes it from me.
I plan on getting there 2 hours early.
I mean, the thing's supposed to start at 3:30 in the morning.
Well, not for the marathon. I'm just going to opening night, 7:00.
You need to find one of those theaters where you buy the seats. You can reserve your seats.
The only one that's around here was the one that is out of Disney that sold out in 17 minutes, because some of those they were doing a special party afterwards and stuff.
Oh yeah, you can go. Yeah, I saw that. You can go to the.
You can go to Hollywood Studios
afterwards. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but that was an impossible ticket to get to, and that was a $100 ticket as well. There's nothing else around here.
I knew it had to be too good to be true with Disney. See?
Yeah, it was $100. But there's nothing else that's around here that has reserved seating. So, if I have to get there a couple hours early, then that's fine. I mean, so be it. I'll do it. I mean, because, I'm going to the 7 o'clock. If I got there at 5 o'clock and, a friend of mine brought me something to eat and I just sat there in line to make sure I got a good seat, then I can deal with that.
Well, I'm with you. Listen, man, it's Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. I look at it as a kid. I remember waiting around all night one time to get concert tickets, for a big show that was coming to town.
You had to wait overnight for the box office to open.
You had to wait for the Ticketmaster booth to open,
Or the Ticketron. Remember Ticketron? Nobody remembers them.
Those are the best. So my thinking is, it's just like that, you're going back to your youth when it comes to Star Wars. So why not, wait a couple hours to make sure you get the seat you want?
I mean, the one thing, and I talked about this on PW Insider, actually, just as an off. They had it, like, Return of the Jedi was in 1983.
Yeah.
It's 2015. You would have thought these movie ticketing websites would have realized, hey, maybe we should buff up our servers.
Maybe. I mean, they all crashed last. Well, the funny thing is.
You know, and the funny thing is, it happened in the UK first.
Oh, yeah.
And they're 6 hours ahead of us, at least in the East Coast, and you would think they'd be like, oh, that's happened there. Maybe it's going to happen here. We should jump on that.
Called a movie theater here, and I asked him about, because I went on the Fandango, like, because tickets were supposed to go on sale after the trailer aired. So
they put them on sale early.
Yes, they did, because I called a theater at 7:30 because I saw the different tickets for the theater that I was going to go to, but I don't want to go to it. I don't want to see it in 3D. 3D doesn't work that well for me. So, and I didn't see 2D listings. So I asked the guy, I go, hey, is 2D going to be available? And he goes, and he gave me this long, convoluted answer about yes, but we don't know exactly what time, or it could be, you know, we might release some and might not with others because it's all up to Disney. And he goes, good luck with the site because over in the UK it's been crashing, but, you know, we have the box office open. You can come by and buy tickets. And then
I would have been in the car 10 seconds later.
Well, he goes, I don't even know when we're going to start selling them here at the box office. So
I would have been sitting there with a lawn chair.
So what happened was I was sitting there, and for whatever reason, like 20 minutes later, I refreshed the screen. And instead of like all the different times being like this dull color that tells you like tickets are not available for that time anymore, they were all like lit up bright orange. And I was like, holy crap, the tickets are available. So I got tickets for me and friends for opening night at the time we wanted. And I was like, how did this just happen? And then it was about a half hour later when, like, Fandango went down. And then after that, movie tickets went down. And
the Alamo Draft House, which is a good, I don't know if they have them in Florida, but that's a phenomenal theater.
Yeah,
chain.
They don't have them here.
They went down.
Yeah. AMC's website went down. It was, and AMC's website, I think, is where you needed to go to get that special Disney ticket, you know, to go see it out at Disney and go to the after party. So it was, I had a friend of mine that was very disappointed. She could not get tickets to that. She was willing to pay the money to go and she couldn't get it. And,
it's
craziness.
Just to show off my Uber nerdness. Like,
yeah.
I have tickets for 4 different screenings. I do. Cause I'm seeing the marathon. And then 2 days later, I'm seeing it with some family and friends at another theater. And then I'm like, well, I got to see it in IMAX. So, like, a week later, tickets for IMAX. Like, and it's like, to me, like, again, like, I don't expect anybody to hear this and understand, but literally my earliest memories are seeing that movie. The first movie.
Oh, same with, the first movie I ever saw was Star Wars. I was 4 years old. I went to a drive-in theater with my parents. It was the first movie I ever saw.
If I had seen it at a drive-in, I would have been so excited. but, like, my earliest memories are literally seeing that movie, you know, and I still own the toys from, like, when I became, you know, from child to teen or whatever, and I threw out all my old toys. The Star Wars stuff was the only stuff I kept because it meant so much to me.
Lucky you.
You know, it's sitting in my basement right now in a bunch of rubber tubs.
Yeah.
Because I would never, you know, every now and then you just want to take them out and look at them. Or when I've got younger family members over, you know, I'll take them out and they'll play with them. And it's just, there's something warm. There's just a warm and fuzzy feeling I get about those movies.
Absolutely. So,
and about those characters. And, you know, there's also the theories of what's going to happen to this person and that gun's going to die. And is this one evil? And you know what? Just the fact that people are so excited and they're talking about it makes me happy that Star Wars is back in the vernacular and in the pop consciousness. Because, you know, I went through, there was a long time, people forget this, from 1985 to 1990-something, there was no Star Wars talked about. It was like that thing
right. That
went away. You know, it was like your old relative that, well, oh, yeah, he went overseas and no one talks to him. You know, it's that, you know, that's kind of how it was. And in today's day and age of franchises and you know, Terminator, Salvation, and Jaws 25, and all these movies, and Hunger Games has 8 movies, and Harry Potter is going to have a new trilogy and all that. The idea that there were 3 Star Wars movies, and then it went away, and there were cartoons and some other little things. The idea that George Lucas said, nope, I'm going to put the Golden Goose away in the desk and close the vault and leave it alone. Like, that's mind-boggling. That would never happen today. And now that it's owned by Disney, it will never happen again. There will never be a time where Disney says, yeah, I think we got to give Star Wars a couple of years off. It's never going to happen. But the fact that it did kind of helped reinvigorate it and make, and I think it's part of the reason why people like me are so excited about it, because, yeah, there were prequels, but those weren't the sequels to my movies.
Absolutely.
this is the sequel to my movies. That's kind of how I feel an ownership to that original trilogy in a way that I don't feel an ownership to anything that's pop culture. You know, like some people get mad about reboots and things like that, and there'll be good reboots and bad reboots, and I never, like, really, you know, got angry about, like, even V, which was a TV show I loved as a kid, when they rebooted it, I went, it's not V, I'm not going to watch it, but that doesn't mean someone else shouldn't have enjoyed it. With Star Wars, I feel an ownership to it that I shouldn't, but I do because it's so tied into my youth and my childhood and probably whatever imagination it sparked as a kid. And so to me, these are the sequels to those movies, and by God, I am going to celebrate it and enjoy it.
Let's tie it into wrestling then. Going into last night, and we knew when that trailer was going to air. We basically knew around the time it was going to be halftime of the Monday Night Football game. Did you think that that trailer would have an effect on the ratings for Raw?
As we record this, I don't know what the ratings for Raw were.
I do. I know what the viewership number was.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet. I am going to guess it probably dipped in that hour.
Okay, I've got the numbers here. Here's the numbers from your site, okay? So the
Raw, they're on my site?
Yes. So the Raw number...
Thank you, Dave Scherer.
Yes.
For beating me.
So the Raw number went up. So last week...
that's good.
It averaged 3.285 million. This week, it averaged 3.357.
Those numbers are still way down from where they were, though.
Right. So they averaged 3.357. First hour did 3.6. Second hour did 3.347. Third hour dipped all the way down to 3.123.
Well, that's up from last week because
they
were close to dipping under 3 million last week.
Right. It was up about 50,000 from last week. 41,000 from last week.
So, top loading that show with Brock, Austin, and Undertaker got them the best number for the first hour they've probably had since August.
Since August 31st.
Because I know in August they did like 3.8 million on one of the August weeks.
August 31st.
They haven't touched that since.
Yep. So it's
wow, that's good for them.
Yeah, it is. But I mean,
that first hour anchored the rest of the show and got them the biggest number they've had in a while.
Right. And I was surprised that, okay, I got it that they had Austin open the show. Well, two things that really surprised me.
What are you talking about? He said it was bullshit reporting. He wasn't going to be there.
Well, the thing that got me was, okay, I don't know.
I didn't like that, by the way, that he said that.
Well, if he knew at that point, maybe it's something that came together that day. I don't know when it came together. But for them not to advertise the hell out of that, saying not only is Steve Austin going to be here and going to be on the show, he's going to open the damn thing up. And then on top of that, they had the Taker-Lesnar segment there, which was fine. But for this gigantic grudge match main event of a pay-per-view, and they didn't do anything with it later on in the night except for show that, the great video package that they have hyping it up, but
I
don't get why they didn't bring those guys back out or do something else with them more in the show or even hold that segment off till later in the show.
Right before you and I sat down to record, I recorded a 2-hour podcast for PW Insider, for the PW Insider Elite.com, our Elite section, which here's a plug. If you go there, you can sign up for 3 days free and check out what we have to offer.
Booyah.
There's no advertising on the site. And there's all sorts of hours of audio and whatnot. So there's your plug for the show, for the site. Paul Crockett and I, who contributes to the site, I just literally said to him, what amazed me about it was they didn't come back later, at least with a pre-tape, where Lesnar's leaving, and then they did like the manic, frenzied Paul Heyman promo.
Yeah.
I was really surprised at that. And there were a couple of times on the show, and I thought the theme of the show was, they did things that I felt, had they advertised them, like the Austin thing, they could have gotten more juice out of the orange as they squeezed it. They could have, like, there were some assets that they tried to use, and they could have gotten more out of those assets. Like the Shield reunion, to me, just tossed out there like that was mind blowing.
Same with me.
And to me, like, and then it's Shield against the Wyatts, although Luke Harper is now missing. It was the Shield against the Wyatts, which has always been something that fascinated a certain portion of their audience. So I know you're going to build it up over the course of the show, and that's fine. But to me, I felt like if they were going to do something more with Rollins and the Shield, one, it needed to be something more than, oh, Rollins just outwitted them again and walked out and was a jerk. Because now how is he proving anything to Shawn Michaels and Triple H, as he claimed he was going to? And two, if you're not going to follow up on that with Roman and Dean and Rollins, then what was the point of all of it? You don't throw things out. Don't throw the line out there if you're not trying to catch the fish. Like, you know, like that's kind of how I look at things. You don't want to do things without a reason and without a reason to build upon them. Because what's the point then?
Right. And the other thing that got me, too, that was just really baffling is I know some people don't like the idea of Kane at this point in his career, you know, being in a world title match. But you know what? So be it. He is. But then he's not even on the go-home show?
That was so weird. Like, and I was like, okay, corporate Kane is suspended. So obviously here comes
Demon Kane.
Kane is the demon. He's going to do something. No sign of him. You can tell this was a show where, I don't know if it was the Randy Orton injury, because I've heard he's got a shoulder injury of some sort, or something happened. But it sort of felt like, what, and I haven't heard this for sure, I feel like the show got ripped up and rewritten late in the day. Because I felt like there were a lot of threads that were started that were dropped, and a lot of things that they just rushed right into. Like even the Rusev Ziggler thing, completely dropped now, more or less.
Right.
They were just on opposite sides of the six-man. And the stuff on SmackDown that, you know, before, for those who are listening, this is before they taped SmackDown in Austin, Texas, it's Summer and Dolph. So that's the story, and Rusev is nowhere to be found. So it's like, okay, so now what happened here that they're dropping this? And we all know it's probably the TMZ thing.
Right.
But it's just, it was a lot of changes in the last minute, and a lot of things, like, I felt like there were threads just left flapping, there were things just left flapping in the wind, as opposed to tying everything up leading into the pay-per-view.
And the thing that gets me right now is you'll sit there and they'll talk about, okay, our ratings are at record lows. Okay, is it because, oh, well, it's a three-hour show and it's, you know, it's dragging. We got to go up against Monday Night Football and we've got to go up against, you know, the baseball playoffs and we got to go up against, you know, new programming in the fall. But the bottom line is that stuff happens every year. To me, you have to look inward at what you're producing, what you're putting out there. And right now, I mean, there's just no sizzle to anything. There's nothing that's fresh. There's nothing that feels unique. And I don't know what it's going to take for WWE to get the message.
I've been saying the same thing ad nauseum on PW Insider to the point subscribers have said to me, enough, we get it. And, you know, it's we don't choose what we choose to report.
Right.
But we have to report what we see, what we observe, what we believe, and how we feel. And one of the things that scares me about WWE right now is it's great to bring Kane into the mix. It's great to have Chris Jericho there. It's great to have John Cena. It's great to have Randy Orton. There's sort of a been there, done that feeling to the presentation for a number of them right now. And even like with the Dudleys, like the Dudleys came back, big pop in Brooklyn, you know, saved the tables, the new, and the, they've been kind of used in a way that they're sort of like, oh, it's the Dudleys again, it's the Dudleys again, it's the Dudleys again, as opposed to feeling like, wow, it's the Dudleys. The entire tag team division is going to change because here are the 9-time tag team champions who are brutal and have put people through tables. Like, the first couple of weeks the Dudleys were back, they had some nice, intense interviews that I really enjoyed. We haven't heard them speak since. And it's like, Bubba can talk.
Right.
Yvonne can talk. Why are you not utilizing these assets?
I'm a big advocate of having more guys talk on Raw, but have everybody talk in smaller segments. Like, have a lot more people get some interview time, but let that interview time, don't let it be in the ring. Let it be backstage. Let it be wherever. But let it be, you know, for some of the stars, maybe 5 minutes. And for some of the other guys, just give them 2 or 3 minutes. But give everybody a platform to talk and get their personalities over.
There's a number of ways they can do that. Number one, if we want to go real old school, they could stick a little box in the corner like they used to on Wrestling Talent.
I'd be fine with it. Put out the curtain, man, that's got WWE.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to say. Number two, if you want to go back to Jim Crockett promotion style, when somebody wins a match, have Renee Young at a curtain, and you go, or you go backstage to Renee Young, and she's got her little set, and she's standing there, and she does a quick, they do a quick interview with somebody. And instead of Renee Young asking a question, or any interviewer, because I'm not knocking Renee, someone asking a question and then they stand there with no follow-up and then they look off all sort of perturbed or they look off into the distance, like have them be like a real backstage interviewer at a sporting event. And you know what? One thing that I used to love that Jim Crockett Promotions would do when I was growing up is they would have Jimmy Garvin come out, right? And Jimmy Garvin would talk about he's in a feud with, I'm just throwing names out here. Maybe he's in a program with Kevin Sullivan, but while he's in that feud with Kevin Sullivan, he's saying, and don't think, I'm not thinking about the United States Heavyweight Championship that Nikita Koloff has, because when Nikita, when you're done with Magnum TA, I want a title shot because I think I've earned one. So you create the idea that all these things that are going on in the company, all of them are important, not just to the audience, because you're telling them, but to the other competitors, because if they are indeed here, if they are indeed wrestling, they should be here to win money, to win championships, or to get revenge on somebody who either wronged them or to hurt somebody, because they're just jerks and they're villains. So if you're not creating one of those reasonings for people to understand you, or for someone to go, okay, I want to see what this guy's going to do next, then why are you there
right.
as a wrestler? And that's something that I think all of professional wrestling, to a certain extent, Ring of Honor is kind of still carries that flame a little bit, but I think there's a lot of wrestling where guys are in the ring and the idea is, oh, well, they're having a great match, or, oh, they're wrestling. Well, what are they wrestling for? What is their goal? What are they here to do? And if they're not here, listen, if you're a wrestler and you get into wrestling as a profession, your job is to win. Why? You want to make money for your family. That's why I like Kevin Owens. He's a prize fighter. The better I do, the better I do for my family. You don't have to like me, but I'm going to knock down everybody in my way. And that is such a great throwback presentation for anybody. You know what? He wants to be champion. Why? I have the Intercontinental title. It means I have more gold. I'm not worried about the power. I'm not worried about who's the CEO. I'm not worried about who's the authority. I want the title because I want to make money. And they don't have enough people that care that way anymore.
And here's the other thing that baffles me. When it comes to your world champion, Seth Rollins, why is he only won? You know, he won last night on Raw. It's the first time I think he's won either on the TV or on the network since SummerSlam.
Since he won the title.
So, dear God, I mean, what the hell is going on, man? I mean, he's your freaking champion. I'm not saying, okay, obviously he can lose a match here or there that's a non-title match, you know, during this run. But mm-hmm. he's supposed to be the top dog. That's why he has that prize. Or at least if he's winning matches, at least let him cheat. That way he's finding a way to stay champion, you know. Do something to make the guy look better. I mean, he's kowtowing to the authority all the time, so he looks like a wimp, and he always has to prove how tough he is. And the whole
I didn't like the Shawn Michaels segment for that reason.
I didn't like that either, because
it was building to Rollins laying out Shawn Michaels
right.
to set up a match. Shawn Michaels should never be in a position where he's getting the better, verbally or otherwise, of the WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
I totally agree, and that it made no sense to me. He's running away from Kane. I mean, my God, I mean, this guy's supposed to be representing your company as the champion. I mean, it's just ludicrous to me that the way that they booked Rollins. I mean, he's done the best that he can.
That was
but
the equivalent of Gene Kaniski getting over on Ric Flair in 1985. You know, like it's like one of those things where somebody thought it was a good idea, but they didn't think through of what it really meant. And how do you? It used to be when something happened in wrestling, it set apart. Something would happen and the dominoes would get knocked down, and you would follow up on it. Maybe it wouldn't be the next week, but down the line. Now the dominoes get knocked down, and they just set them up again to knock them down again the next week, and then they set them up again.
Yeah.
And that's why there's no cause and effect for some of the stuff that happens. Every week it's kind of like Groundhog Day. We're up. Now we're back to this again. And that's all well, fine, and good, but at some point you got to stop running in place.
Do you think Seth Rollins will be champion come WrestleMania?
See, if it was up, now we're talking real pie in the sky here. Theoretically, he should be champion at WrestleMania and get through WrestleMania because that's the last thing the audience is going to expect.
Right.
I don't know that that's going to happen. And I don't know who he defends the title against at this point, unless, you know, you go back to Seth versus Brock Lesnar after Brock wins the Rumble. Because to me, I can't think of another
Reigns.
Big money match for the WWE Championship right now.
Well, that's the whole thing that I'm looking at, because we can sit there and say, well, you know, it sure looks like...
I can't think of a big money match that's going to top line a WrestleMania. It's going to have 100,000 people.
Right.
I mean,
that's the whole thing, because
you can sit there and go, all right, John Cena versus The Undertaker. All right, on paper, or The Rock against Brock Lesnar. That makes sense on paper, but is that enough that people are going to go, wow, WrestleMania? Because in my mind, they're trying to build this WrestleMania as if it's the 21st century equivalent of the Silver Dome.
Yes.
And I don't see a Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant moment coming.
That's the whole thing.
I mean, and you can change up the creative real quick. But I mean, I think that's what I think in the back of the minds of most fans, they're looking for something along those lines. They want that big thing to happen because. Listen, I know there's a lot of fans who have already booked their travel to go, and there's a lot of fans who already booked a lot of hotel rooms. And, yes, WrestleMania is kind of like Woodstock now, where everybody sort of goes to WrestleMania City that week. But at the end of the day, you want there to be that huge, major attraction. I don't know that they have it, but I also don't know what they've got planned, because, you know what, there's been a lot of times in the past where out of nowhere, all of a sudden, Mike Tyson's involved, and that's a huge deal, you know? And maybe they've got some sort of idea.
Well, that's
Taylor Swift is going to join the Divas Revolution.
Yeah,
there
right. So that's the whole thing, because we can sit here and say, well, you know, it sure looks like Reigns is going to be the next guy, and he likely will. But to say Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins, that just has no buzz right now, and that's why
I'd rather see Roman try for the belt again and lose, and then have to try and work his way back up, because I think at least the one thing that they did accomplish last year is when he lost. There was some sympathy for him where there was not before. And I think sometimes sometimes they try to be too cute with the presentation of their top baby faces, with them telling the little sophomore jokes. And I think sometimes they let the guys talk too much and give almost these monologues where they're not comfortable doing them, like Ryback talking about The Secret, which I think was a big mistake back in the day. And I think sometimes, less is more. And sometimes if they just try and give people a good old-school sort of good versus evil, win versus loss scenario, people will fill in the story in their head and have a reason to care about some of these characters. And I think sometimes they try too hard and they take these characters too far in one direction, and they end up losing the thread of the story.
Well, that's why I was so adamant when it came to, we're talking about this big match feel for this huge show, and that's why I didn't think it necessarily would happen, but I kept it in the back of my mind, what is the biggest match that they could put together right now? And to me, it's still Austin against Lesnar. But obviously, they're not doing it. I mean, they didn't even
sniff at that. I don't think Steve Austin looked like he was preparing for a wrestling match.
Oh, I totally agree. When you saw him doing that podcast with Brock Lesnar on Monday night, they didn't even sniff around that. It was like, don't even go close to this. Don't even tease it. Don't talk about it. Don't do anything about that, because it's not happening.
Yeah, and I also think when he did that entrance, I don't want to say he was winded, but he certainly seemed like he was a little overwhelmed by the end of it.
But isn't that the biggest match that they could do? Because and to me, go back.
Sure,
to...
Sure, but if the guy's got spinal stenosis and he doesn't want to wrestle,
absolutely,
it's a non-factor.
That's why when Heyman brought that whole thing up a long time ago and all that, so that's why. Like,
I think
as
that
a street...
was just Paul being Paul and thinking,
it was.
We'll create this buzzworthy moment to get people to talk about the podcast.
Oh,
I don't think that was ever Paul going, maybe we can backdoor Austin into doing this.
Well, it's funny because, when I talked to Paul a few weeks ago,
name dropper.
Well, I did that interview with him. Name dropper, you're plugging your site like crazy. So
I plugged it once.
You mentioned your site a couple of times. That's fine. But, I mean, when I talked to Paul when I did this interview.
When we plugged it, you talked to Paul on PW Insider. Now. Go ahead.
When PW Insider carried my interview with Paul Heyman.
See, there you go. You're learning.
I was adamant about the Austin Lesnar thing, and he was just like, well, it's like, blah blah blah, it's not gonna happen, not gonna happen or whatever, and he was kind of teasing along with it. And the one thing that I wish that I brought up, because he kept saying it's just not gonna happen, as I said, Paul, you're the one that brought it up in the first place. You're the one that caused all this, man. It's your damn fault that I'm grilling you about it now, get over it, Paul. This is the way it goes. So what number or what do you think it would take for WWE to actually enact real changes when it comes to who they're pushing and how they present their programming on Raw?
What do you mean in terms of number? You mean like a rating?
Do you think it would be a rating, or do you think it would be, what do you think it would take? Would it just be a simple number, or would it have to be a prolonged thing? I mean, what do you think it would take?
I don't want to pigeonhole myself. But I would think the one thing that would scare them more than anything would either be the stock plummeting.
Yep.
And I don't know that creative I don't know if the creative direction of that company has ever resulted in the fluctuation of that stock.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, who's the one thing that they're beholden to beyond their stockholders is NBC Comcast. So if Bonnie Hammer called and said, we're just not happy with these numbers, suddenly the impetus is upon WWE to fix that. Because remember, come January, not only does Raw have to exist for 3 hours on the USA Network, but now they've got to give the USA Network another 2 hours of prime material, possibly live, in SmackDown.
Yep.
So if anybody's going to be able to kind of yank the chain of WWE, it's going to be NBC, because that's their prime partner.
Well, the thing that kills me, too, is I give WWE all the credit in the world for this, because their social media presence is incredible between Twitter and especially on YouTube with the numbers that they do there, the way they're able to tie all these different things in. But then we sit there and we talk about mainstream exposure. Man, they get a lot of that for WrestleMania. They get a lot of that for SummerSlam. Totally understandable. But when we sit here and we talk about, okay, now they've got this weekly thing on Tuesday night on ESPN, on SportsCenter, which is great. I mean, it's on ESPN, too. It's at 9 o'clock. So, I mean, hey, it's better than nothing. And they can say, hey, we're on ESPN every week. We've got this tie-in. They talk about mainstream coverage and their footprint on social media. But that's not translating over to viewers. I mean, it's great that people are buzzing and talking about it, but it's not becoming like, oh, well, now I got to go out of my way to watch Raw.
Well, the thing is, too, and this is something that hasn't really been dug into, you know, you talk about their social media numbers are amazing, you know, whether it's the Instagram or the Facebook or the YouTube or whatever. There's a whole new generation of celebrities who have been created because of YouTube.
Yeah.
Like VH1 just aired the Streamy Awards. It was hosted by this guy named Tyler Oakley. I had no idea who the hell he was.
I know he is. He's a YouTube star.
He's got millions and millions and millions of subscribers on YouTube.
Not only is he a YouTube star, he met the First Lady,
okay,
and has done stuff with her.
There's a guy named PewDiePie, who I had never heard
PewDiePie.
Of.
PewDiePie! He's got the number one YouTube channel in the world.
I started learning about all this, and I said, there's a whole number labyrinth of celebrity that even the mainstream media, for the most part, has not caught up to yet. So WWE, and you know, obviously the ratings are not what they used to be, and obviously the internet stuff and the social media stuff is not going to be as financially beneficial as, say, a USA Network deal, but they are making inroads with their social media numbers with an audience that might not be correctly measured at the moment. And so while the numbers in one place might have dropped, and again, this is just theoretical, I don't know this for sure, the numbers in one place have dropped, theoretically, at least some of these people and possibly a younger generation that wouldn't be measured by the existing numbers, they are engaging, and I sound like a WWE press release here, I'm sorry, they're engaging and they're absorbing and they're watching and they're interacting with the WWE multimedia stuff, for lack of a better term, in a way that they wouldn't otherwise, because that's not where they are. They're not watching TV. They're on the computers.
Yeah.
I've got family members who their entire social life and their entire idea of going out with their friends is to all get together and go gaming and stream their games and rip on each other over the gaming.
And that's what PewDiePie does. All he does is play video games and he makes jokes.
I wasn't even aware of this until, like, family members and things were like, and they were explaining it all to me, and I'm like, and I mean, South Park just did an episode about this about a year or so ago about how there is an entirely different world out there that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. It could be that WWE, because of their social media, they're starting to tap into that, and it might not be something that they're actively doing, but they might have, you know, they might be getting numbers in a different way, and they might be getting an interaction in a different way that isn't measured by the Nielsen system.
Right. I mean,
which I think is all a work anyway. That's another story.
It's crazy that some of the biggest YouTube channels are just people playing video games and talking with their friends or cracking jokes while they do it.
Hello, Twitch TV.
Yes.
I mean, that thing got bought for a huge amount of money.
Yes. But,
and you're talking about something that I think if you walk up to the average person today who is in their 30s and went, you know what Twitch TV is? They wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Right.
But that was an asset that was worth millions and millions of dollars.
The weird thing about PewDiePie, he was on Colbert like a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was on Stephen Colbert's show on late night TV. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, I think this is just we're starting to just see the changeover of that stuff hitting the general populace. So I think in the next couple of years, the Tyler Oakleys and the PewDiePies, they're going to be celebrities in their own right just for being celebrities on the internet, where before, you know, it was like the Kardashians are famous for being the Kardashians. Who the hell cares? But there's a whole generation of people out there who are like, oh, my God, I love Kim and Khloe. You know what I mean? And I don't know that WWE is going to take it all in that same direction, but there's a reason they started that up-up-down-down channel with Xavier Woods.
Mm-hmm.
And, listen, Total Divas, as much as the male-centric demographic might be like, I don't care about this, I have a lot of friends that I went to school with or that I grew up with or friends who are spouses or girlfriends of my friends who, when they see me, will now ask me about the Bellas or Natalya. Mm. Because, and they don't care about wrestling. They just want to know about the people who are involved in the show, because that showing them in that different light and in that strange alter world that is a strange reality that is Total Divas that makes no sense when you think about it if you're a wrestling fan, they've created them, they've given them a level and a cult of personality and a cult of celebrity that they didn't have just being wrestlers on Raw and SmackDown. They've exposed them to a completely different demographic. So it could very well be that the YouTube stuff and the social media stuff has exposed them to a completely different demographic that we're not thinking about when we're just talking about hard numbers when it comes to the ratings.
We've only got a couple minutes left. So Hell in a Cell is coming up on Sunday. Tell me how Brock Lesnar does not win that match against Undertaker.
I, unless they got a big angle plan to set up the next Lesnar story, I don't know.
I agree.
The basic idea would be that Brock gets his revenge on the Undertaker.
I would think so, too, because Brock is...
Undertaker's kind of been the heel in all this.
He is, but you know what? It was funny because when Brock jumped up on the apron on Raw and then jumped back down, he's the one that got booed.
That is true.
So it's gone back and forth.
But
Brock's just depends
always been
where
that one guy who can go back and forth over that fence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just whoever he's facing, that's whether you cheer for Brock or not, you know? I still want to see Wild Brock just destroy everything in sight. I haven't seen that in a little while now.
No, not since he killed J&J Security off.
That is true. He took an axe to the door and it almost took out somebody in the crowd.
Did you ever see the cell phone footage? Somebody was shooting behind the guy that got hit with the piece of the door.
Yes.
And you just see the guy go down, and then other people are like jumping on top of him trying, like, yes! And I'm like, somebody just got assaulted with a piece of a car door here, and you just want to try and get on TV.
Hey, I would do the same thing. I would grab that door, and I would hold it over my head like I was a Jawa, okay? I'd have no problem with that. So Cena's going to be taking some time off here, and Randy Orton, I know you've got the report about how he's injured.
Yeah, apparently he's got an injured shoulder. I don't know the severity of it.
Right. So we don't know if he's going to be out for a period of time or whatnot. But so WWE is going to have to look elsewhere. Now, the common thinking is more Roman Reigns, more Dean Ambrose. I'm sure that's going to be the case. But is there anybody else in your mind stands out that, okay, I can see them doing something more with this guy? I mean, I would like to see more with Kevin Owens, but there's plenty of other guys that don't get much TV time that maybe could get an increased role here.
There was a territory in the late 80s called Continental.
Yeah.
And Eddie Gilbert came in as the booker. And a lot of people always talk about it, like he turned chicken crap into chicken salad. And what he did was he came up with a lot of ways to use talents who weren't being used and a lot of really vibrant, sometimes violent angles. And I don't know that WWE used the violent angles, but you know what? It's pro wrestling. You need a little more chaos. It needs to feel a little bit scarier, and they need to go with the anything can happen motif. You know, they always say anything can happen in WWE. It's not always how it really is, but they need to present it that way. So I think, you know what, just in the basics of the old school wrestling, we need to have some upsets. We need to shock some people, and maybe some of these villains, whether it's Bray Wyatt or Kevin Owens, they need to do something really dastardly to get sympathy on the heroes so the heroes can come back and overcome the obstacles.
Yeah.
I mean, when's the last time Bray Wyatt really did something so terrible that you were like, oh, what a terrible, you know, he's never been Kevin Sullivan in Florida, you know, to someone's Dusty Rhodes. You know, he talks a good game, but at the end of the day, we never see him really hurt anybody.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Maybe, you know, they need these villains to be diabolical, and they, you know, to, if they are, then the heroes can stand up to them and hopefully overcome them in the storylines. And I think sometimes the internal logic needs to be strengthened a little bit, because a lot of times I feel like they go down a road and then they kind of shrug and they go, okay, we're going to go this way instead. And they never acknowledge the way that there's never a way to tie things up.
It's funny because despite all of our bickering about WWE programming right now, I think Hell in a Cell is going to be a really good show.
See, this is the one thing that I don't think they're giving credit for, is that even though the stories are not always the best, and even though there are things that might annoy us as fans who are watching so closely and paying attention to the minutiae, if you just are tuning into the show, meaning a big show, a big pay-per-view event, I still think the level of wrestling is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you go back and look at some of those shows from the late 80s or even the mid-90s, the level of wrestling was kind of abysmal in comparison. There is a greater level of in-ring work now, especially when you include the independents and Ring of Honor and NXT and all that, right now than there's ever been before. You know, because if you look at, you go back 20 years, it was WCW was okay in the ring, but it was never a regular, concise, sort of straightforward momentum. WWE, if you got a good match, chances are it was one or two guys, Bret or Shawn, who were carrying guys. And then ECW, on a smaller level, kind of went balls to the wall with the Athletics. And then if you look at that and you compare it to where they are 20 years later, there's a lot more of the ball-to-wall Athletics now and the good bell-to-bell action across the board than there ever was. So, I mean, that's the one thing I think wrestling fans have to... And I don't think anybody, is selfish or spoiled, but sometimes you have to look at it and you kind of have to step away from the bubble of what it is right now and look at the bigger picture of how everything is presented. There's a lot, even with the girls, I know everyone kind of bags on the Divas Revolution. I think week to week there's a higher sense and a higher priority in strong, good in-ring wrestling in 2015 than there really was 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago, just across the entire board of professional wrestling matches.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about New Japan, which everybody's in vogue with now. Everyone loves New Japan.
Yeah.
So when you include that, it raises up the rising tide raises up the ships even more. There's a lot of good wrestling right now. And I think sometimes people overlook it because there's some illogical storylines or there's some bad finishes. And yes, there are, and I'm not going to argue that. And we hope that's going to get improved. But I do believe across the board, most weeks there is some good wrestling. It just might not be on Monday nights.
Well, I know you got to go. So everybody can find you on Twitter. Everybody can go to Mike PW Insider, find you there. You can also find the website PWInsider.com on Twitter. And, of course, go to PWInsider.com or go to PWInsiderElite.com, sign up, become a member, and get all the goodies, including all
three
the different podcasts.
Free.
And 3 days free right now if you sign up. How about that? So
no, it's always been 3 days free.
Oh, it's always.
We want people to sample it, check it out, and if you don't, and listen, if it's not for you, then no harm, no foul.
How dare they say it's
not
for
them. But if it is for you, hopefully you want to endorse us by paying for us, and hopefully you want to endorse us by spending some time with us every day.
And if you don't sign up, Dave sure will show up on your doorstep and try to punch you in the face.
No.
That doesn't happen?
No, I'm kidding.
I thought Dave did that.
No.
Okay.
He's mellowed.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Always appreciate the time, Mike.
And again, it's always a lot of fun talking with you. I always enjoy talking. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter, everybody. And Star Wars is coming, so at least we got something fun to look forward to.
Absolutely. And may the Force be with you.
Thank you.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.